Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Arizona Good Business Radio, connecting leaders together to have conversations about building strong local communities through doing good business. I'm your host, Thomas Barr, Executive Director of Local First Arizona, a statewide organization advocating for and celebrating locally owned businesses. We are the largest local business coalition in North America and raise awareness of the benefits of building strong local economies. Our hopes today are to inspire more companies to do good business by highlighting local companies that are building a better Arizona. Today, I am joined by Eric Bailey, the president of Bailey Strategic Innovation Group, one of the fastest growing communication consulting firms in the Western United States, and Evan Norris, who for the past 5 years has overseen community outreach for Credit Union West, who serves more than 69,000 members in Arizona. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
All right. So I would like to start out today by just hearing both of your personal stories, and feel free to kind of dig in and let us know why you do the work that you do today and where you are. Eric, let's go ahead and start with you.
It's funny, whenever folks ask me my story, I preface it by saying it's kind of like Forrest Gump. So I've gone through a number of different arenas and career paths. And actually, the thread that goes through all of it is that I care to help people. I had a background growing up where I was in some bad situations with my father, and what I learned from all of that craziness is that I have something unique to share with the world, and it has to do with kindness. Every job that I've been in, whether it was in, you know, popping kettle corn at the Phoenix Zoo or helping guest services at the Phoenix Zoo, which is where I met Tommy a million years ago, or doing marketing or doing healthcare or doing finance or doing what I do now, it's all about kind of helping people along their path. And so that's a little bit about my background. Yeah. But what I really, really care about doing is I see where people make the common mistakes, and people make their mistakes all day, every day. And if I can help them see those mistakes, I can help them make different decisions.
Cool. And I know, Eric, in your longer bio that I did not read, you have a lot of super interesting things that you've done. You've taken Larry Fitzgerald on a tour of the zoo to pet a rhinoceros. Mm-hmm. You have walked on the campus of Harvard with LL Cool J. Mm-hmm. What? How? Why? So tell us a little bit about that.
So the Larry Fitzgerald, I mentioned I used to work at the Phoenix Zoo, and I did marketing for the zoo for a while, and digital marketing. So I would do the Twitter account for, you know, the oldest Bornean orangutan on the earth. And I did, I tweeted as a koala for a while, and I did all the social media for the zoo. And in doing social media, I had to get behind the scenes a lot of times. And so when keepers were unavailable to do a celebrity tour, they said, "Hey, Eric, you know what you're doing. Why don't you take so-and-so around?" And they said, "Oh, we've got someone really special coming in." They never told me who. And so all of a sudden, Larry Fitzgerald and his son come in. I'm like, "Oh my God." So I'm freaking out, but I took him on a tour, and the rhino keeper actually let us go behind the scenes and go to the night house. And so we got to pet the rhinos, you know, away from the bars. So that was pretty cool. And with LL Cool J, one of my previous lives, I did international change management with a Harvard professor. And I went to Harvard to listen to one of his executive lectures. And when we were on a break, in the next classroom over was Chris Paul, LL Cool J, Channing Tatum, and all these celebrities doing it was about leading outside of their fame. So doing what's good for the community outside of their fame, which is really cool. So they were on a break the same time we were on a break, and all the girls were freaking out because of Channing Tatum. And
wait, not because of LL Cool J.
Yeah. LL Cool J. The interesting thing is at that moment, so as I was there on the campus, my mother-in-law was actually under the knife doing a hernia surgery here at Mayo Clinic. And she's a huge LL Cool J fan from NCIS, a huge fan. I think that's the right show. And so I'm like, I'm going to be brave. I'm going to ask him to say a little message for her. So I said, "Excuse me, Mr. Smith." His real name is Todd Smith. So, "Excuse me, Mr. Smith." And I kind of give the preamble. My mother-in-law, she's in surgery right now. She's a huge fan. She's in love with you. And he's like, "Oh, I'm happy to send a message." Wow. So I got out my phone and recorded it. And he's like, "Hey, Carla, everything's going to be fine. I'm praying for you." Sweet. Wow. So I'm freaking out. And I sent a picture of like a screenshot to my wife. I'm like, "Guess what just happened?" And so when my mother-in-law woke up from surgery, my wife played the video, and she's like crying. She's like, and then you know, a couple hours later, she's like, was that real? Or was like just coming out of the anesthesia? Yeah. So that was really fun. Yeah. Another really interesting thing that's happened is you mentioned Luke Air Force Base. Mm. I'm actually in the 2018 to 2020 honorary commander class.
Excellent.
And so I've actually got to fly an F-16.
Cool.
In the backseat.
Yeah,
of course. which is cool. And I've got to do barrel rolls in F-16. And
that's so cool.
Again, wow. Forrest Gump. All these things kind of keep happening. Yeah. And it's fun to be a part of life. You know what I mean?
That's awesome. And I can attest to the Phoenix Zoo stuff. So putting it full out there, I know Eric Bailey because he hired me at the Phoenix Zoo something like 9.5 years ago. And so we go back. And it's true. When you work for an institution like that and a celebrity comes, people know somebody's coming, but you don't know who it is until they get there. And sometimes they're like way more like private tours and stuff like that. We had Betty White come before. Political people would come. There's so many people that will come to town and be like, I would love to come see the animals at the zoo, which I think is really cool. Mm-hmm. And so luckily people like Eric get to tour them around sometimes.
Yeah.
So,
Chelsea Clinton was just there a couple weeks ago.
That's right. She was doing a book reading. Uh-huh. Yeah. So crazy.
Yeah. And so if you hear me call Thomas Tommy,
yeah,
it's because I hired Tommy Barr a long time ago. So I can't shake that.
Yeah. Yeah. Most people can't. Okay, so we're going to get to Evan, and I want to preface this by saying, and we kind of touched on it already, that, and we'll dig a little bit more deeper into what you do, Eric, and what you do, Evan, through Credit Union West, but bringing you both here today was very intentional from Local First Arizona's perspective, because we work with both of you in the community. Eric, you work with many different groups, which I'll let you share in a minute, just what I would define as just being good to people and treating people well as they should be, which seems like you shouldn't have to, you know, really convince people to do that. But here we are. Evan, you work with so many different people in the community. Not only do you have, you know, large teams at Credit Union West and do many different things, your credit union was incepted on Luke Air Force Base years ago. Mm-hmm. And you guys represent so many different people in the community. So before we kind of dig into all that, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got here in Arizona.
Sure. So I've worked in the finance industry since I was 19. So that's kind of been, now my motivation for being in finance wasn't anything special. It was because, well, as a bank teller, you get tuition assistance with school. Mm. So, you know, that wasn't a passion necessarily, more just a kind of a survival technique, if you will, because school's so expensive. But, you know, what I really learned from being in finance is that there's a large dichotomy between what you learn in the industry and what you learn outside from mm-hmm. a financial perspective. And I don't have any LL Cool J stories. But what
the bar has been set pretty high already.
Yeah, there's still time. So, but what I love is getting to pass on knowledge that I've learned. It just being relatively young, I know that a lot of my peers who are in their, you know, 20s, there's just a lot of financial misunderstandings out there. And I've held different roles in the finance industry. Mm. Certainly currently I'm under the marketing umbrella, but community outreach is really well fitted for what I am passionate about, because there's just, like I said, there's so much financial misinformation out there. People have a lot of perceptions that they receive from their families, their parents, and some of those are a little sketchy, if you will. And so what I love is just being able to pass on the knowledge that, you know, it can be a right or wrong way to do something. Mm-hmm. And there can be some commonly held beliefs out there that actually can be a little bit damaging. So I one thing that I that just keeps me within the finance industry is just the desire to help people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've worked at banks, I've worked at credit unions. They've all been local institutions. Obviously, there are several that are not, you know, a lot of national banks, but I've been very fortunate to work at a local institution. Mm-hmm. And growing up in a smaller town in Texas, one thing I love about Texas, and I'm so sorry for being a Texan and plugging Texas, I can't help it, but I love the familial aspect of the community there. Yeah. And that's kind of the perception that I get at a local institution as well. It's very familial. It's, you know, leaning on shoulders. It's not just based on your number as mm-hmm. as an account holder. Mm-hmm. You're not just a transaction. There is a relationship there. And so kind of that passion and just the familial aspect of a true community at a local institution, I think makes all the difference. So mm-hmm. it's really cool that even in my short career, getting to see those two things come hand in hand has really been special.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And tell us a little bit more about Credit Union West. Who are you guys? What do you do in the community? What kind of sets you apart?
Certainly. So we're not the only credit union in town, obviously. We were founded back in 1951 on Luke Air Force Base.
Cool.
And if you're not familiar with credit unions, a lot of credit unions will start out serving a specific occupation. So we've got teacher credit unions. We've got coal miner credit unions. We were a military credit union. So back in 51, we had a small group of, I think it was 5 or 10 people that founded the credit union. And the purpose of it was to serve initially the civilians, but that expanded a little bit in the following years to serve all the personnel at Luke Air Force Base, military and civilians. So since 51, we've grown a lot. You know, we've opened our membership options. You don't have to be in the military. You don't have to be in the civilian force working on base. You simply just have to live, work, or worship in Maricopa or Yavapai County. Mm-hmm. So at the end of the day, it's really easy to join, but you know, that commitment to the military has stayed there. But what's so great is that as we've grown, we've now been able to graft other groups into the family. You know, whether it's in healthcare or educational institutions, colleges, high schools, we work with a lot of local nonprofits and charities and organizations, over 100 each year, mm-hmm. In some way. And so really being able to work with a lot of varied groups, I think just makes it even all the more interesting.
Yeah.
You're getting a lot of different perspectives, a lot of different information on what organizations are looking for from a financial perspective, but also getting to work with individuals, not just organizations as a whole, but working with the individuals in the community and kind of seeing what their needs are and what they're looking for and finding ways that we can help provide that just to make their personal financial lives just a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm. That's so cool. And testament from Local First, Credit Union West always shows up. You guys, it's one of those things that I think brings the local movement together that we're working on through Local First, is that, you know, whenever there's something going on in the community, it doesn't matter if it's benefiting you, mm-hmm. you're there to support it. And I think that that's it just says a lot about a credit union like yours when you guys do stuff like that. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
Eric, tell us a little bit about your company and what you do. We know a little bit about you now. What brought you to start this work?
So there's two answers to that question.
Okay.
So there's the answer that of what I say that I do, and then there's the answer of what we really do. And so what we say we do is we do management consulting. So we work with organizations of all size, public and private, doing strategic planning, leadership development, executive coaching, and all of the work to get stuff done. That's what we say we do. What we really do is we are changing the way the world communicates. So the main problem that happens in any of those things that are listed, the strategic planning, the leadership development, the coaching, the diversity inclusion, all of those things run into the same problems in human communication. So mm-hmm. I was working with a city council recently, and two council members always at odds. Mm-hmm. And they can't agree on anything for the 3 years they've been seated on the council together. And I come in and I do my brand of strategic planning and actually walk them through this communication methodology.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time I actually have them doing work, I intentionally sat them next to each other to partner. And they came away laughing, saying, "I never knew we could agree on anything."
Mm-hmm.
And that was the catalyst. And so we're actually able to get strategic planning done faster by weaving in these communication techniques.
Mm-hmm.
And no one ever knows that they're doing it. That's what I say. It's what I really do. It's not what I say I do.
Right.
But I do that for, you know, a lot of municipalities. I did the math a couple of weeks ago. And if you look at the citizens that have been served by all the groups that I've worked with, we're over, I think, 78% of Arizona citizens
mm-hmm.
Have been eventual benefactors of the work. Or beneficiaries, I'm not sure which word to use. But then I also work with small businesses a lot. One of the things that kind of sets us apart is that our pricing structure is designed to help people. And so there have been exactly zero instances of us saying no because an organization didn't have budget. And we'll find discounts, we'll make it work. You know, we do a lot of big companies too. We've worked with Google, we're working with you know, organizations all around the country. And those folks can afford the budget. And so it makes it a lot easier for us to go to you know, a three-person nonprofit or to, you know, town of Wickenburg and do work with. And they're like, well, you know, we don't have the budget for it. Mm-hmm. And we do it anyway because we really want to spread the message of here's how we can change the world through communication.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Evan, in Credit Union West, how are you guys successful in your communication, maybe internally and or externally? What are some things that you see in the community?
Certainly. Well, obviously, when you get people communicating, there's always an possibility for miscommunication. I think that's one of our downfalls.
Right.
I think it just comes back to just being truthful and being clear. You know, I think when we try to fluff up and, you know, I know that I work under the marketing umbrella, but you get into that marketing speak and it tends to add confusion rather than simplify things. Mm-hmm. And so I think just knowing what your message is and trying to stay true to that and be clear, not cram too much into a message. And when I say message, it can be anything. We obviously have emails and phone calls and advertisements, but even just in conversations, just trying to be clear. Obviously, that has to be built on trust a bit.
Yeah.
Because if you're trying to maintain that level of clarity, you've got to trust the other person is trying to do the same, mm-hmm. which in an ideal world, yes, we'd all be communicating on that same level. But I think just as an organization, just not leading people to believe something that's not true.
Yeah.
Being clear, if we say that this is what we're doing, that's what we're doing. You know, we're not trying to put on smoke and mirrors. We want people to understand and be equipped. And, you know, what I love about my job is not just what I do, but what I don't do. I'm not a salesman. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that. What that means is that I get to simply just exhibit information. This is what we have to offer.
Mm-hmm.
We're not all things to all people. So this is what we have. And if this is going to benefit you, I'd love to have that continued conversation. But if we're not, no hard feelings. There are other organizations that can help meet those needs. So mm-hmm. I think it's just simply not trying to fool people.
Yeah. And Eric, I'm sure that all of this is resonating with you. So I think trust is the key component.
Yeah.
I just completed a leadership program and participate in a lot of different groups throughout the state and throughout the valley. The ones that I see benefit the most from coming together are the ones that will work on building trust first mm-hmm. and the relationship rather than just trying to get something completed, because everyone comes to a situation with their bias mm-hmm. or their intentions in the back of their mm-hmm. mind of what they want to complete or see accomplished. And we forget that, you know, that trust component is what we actually need to establish first.
Yeah.
What are some things you see, Eric, when you walk into a situation or walk into an institution? Is there a common theme? Is every situation different? What does it kind of look like?
So there are some universal themes. And actually, I put together what I call the principles of human understanding because there are certain things that we are just naturally inclined to do because we're human. And those things butt up against each other all the time. And so you mentioned, you know, people come into a situation with their preconceived notions, their preconceived ideas of what they think it should be.
Yeah.
Where problem happens is where, you know, my notions of the way things are different from your notions of the way things are. And that can really cause some dissonance, because when you show up in a way that I don't expect you to, I'm going to judge you harshly and say, you know, you're an idiot. What are you thinking? Mm-hmm. And actually that idea, you know, we say this phrase all the time is how could you possibly see it that way? How could you possibly do it that way? How could you possibly not want this? And we go through that. But, you know, in all of my research, I found that the subtext of that phrase, how could you possibly is you're an idiot. And we say it all the time, you know, and what happens is when people perceive the world differently than we do, our thought is, no, you're dumb. You're an idiot. That's so wrong. Mm. And then we put that judgment on there. And that context underlays all of the issues that we deal with. You know, whether it's just, you know, in a business decision, should we buy this thing or that thing? Well, I've got an idea and my experience is this is better.
Mm-hmm.
Well, your idea and your experience is that's better. And which is right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want to be so quick to jump to the rightness or wrongness, but it's like, they're both right. Mm. They both could work in different ways. And let's let go of that judgment of you're an idiot
mm-hmm.
and say, here's why I think this one's okay. Here's why you think, are we okay with either? And make the decision a little softer instead mm-hmm. of being firm, right, wrong, win, lose.
Sure.
And I noticed that there's certain things that just keep coming out in every conversation. I mean, a lot of us here are married, right? We see that every day in our marriage.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this idea of, how could you possibly do with that? That's not what I said. And we go through these things. Well, it's, there's standard human barriers to communication that we run into all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, and I could keep rambling on, but this idea of right and wrong, good or bad, these are all judgments. I mean, we want to believe that these are rooted in some concrete, forgive the reference, but they're stamped into stone tablets.
Sure.
Right? But it's all situational, right? I was told as a kid, like, don't go into a woman's purse. Like, it is wrong to go inside a woman's purse. And I'm like, okay, I got it. And like, every time I almost go into a woman's purse, like, everyone in my family reinforces, don't do that thing. But let's say that I'm walking down the street and there's a woman walking towards me. And she, like, you know, we're about 50 feet away. She starts flailing around. Her purse goes flying. And then she's like, she passes out on the concrete. And I run up to her because clearly she's had some kind of issue. And the last words that she says before she passes out are, be epi purse, and passes out. Now, what that means is that she's probably allergic to bees, probably got stung by a bee, and she has an EpiPen in her purse. If the rule is don't go inside a woman's purse, that's wrong, then what do I do? Right? It's the rule. It's not concrete. It's situational. So in that situation, of course, I'm going to go and save this woman's life.
Sure.
But we have all these ideas of that's good, that's bad, that's right, that's wrong. Concrete.
Yeah.
Hard, fast rule, but it's not. And so a lot of times we have to take these ideas a little softer and we have to think like, okay, well, Tommy may have a different rule about this, right? And so how do I adjust my way of thinking to make sure that when I butt up against that rule, that we can still have a productive conversation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So interesting. And how does that carry over to like when you go and work with the city or with a business? How do you kind of unveil that a little bit?
So what I try to do first and foremost is I ask just a couple of like softball questions before the session even starts. So I'll do an online survey or interviews and I say, what's the best opportunity for improvement in your organization? Mm. And I leave it at that because when you ask someone what can be improved, they're never going to say me, right? They say, well, you know, all these things outside of me need to be improved. And what I start to do is I start to kind of match these up against each other and see, okay, where are there overlaps and where is there dissonance? And where there's dissonance, when I start the session, I say, let's talk about this. And you see all of a sudden, well, they've written it down, so it must be there, and they have to talk about it. And what we find is that once we start to go into those conversations, I'm pretty well adept at guiding those conversations so that we can have them safely. Mm-hmm. And we can address, you know, I work with a number of police departments, and, you know, in one of the police departments I'm working with, the chief is a hands-off, let them figure it out kind of chief, but the assistant chiefs want chief to go and hold people accountable. Mm-hmm. And so there's some dissonance there. And there's one situation where in the executive level meeting, there was literal yelling and screaming, not quite fisticuffs, but like it was a very intense situation. And, you know, the idea is, well, we're just working out our issues is one way of thinking about it. Well, the other person says, this is completely unprofessional. And so how do we have that conversation, you know? And so then, you know, we worked through and we created some understanding around that, some rules. And when people are yelling and screaming, what does that mean for you over here who doesn't like it, right? Mm-hmm. Well, actually, it brings up some issues of fighting and I didn't like my parents fought.
Yeah.
Oh, I get that, right? And so we can address it and start working through it. And so as we do that in organizations, you see that people are able, once they clear that hurdle, now everything happens much faster, Decisions are happening faster. When people have disagreement, that gets resolved faster. And it actually, you know, yes, we solve the strategic plan or whatever, but we also put them on a path for success into the future.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And I love all the work that you do, Eric. And you were one of our keynote speakers at the inaugural Arizona Good Business Summit earlier this year. And everyone that I run into that was there was just like, I love that psychology stuff. Like, I love just that's what I dig. Like, you know, I love reading about it. I've looked them up online, all this stuff. And I keep thinking about it too. And I posted this on LinkedIn not too long ago, but we were actually, I was coming to this office that we're in right now for a team meeting. Cause Mac 6, one of the sponsors of the show, is awesome. And they allow us to use their space, when we need it. And we had our marketing team here. They were doing a team building day. And I was going to pop in and just say hello. And I texted one person that was in on the meeting and I said, which conference room are you in? Didn't answer for a little bit. So I texted somebody else that was in it. Which conference room are you in? They actually then both responded to me, separate texts. And one said, we're in the big conference room. And the other person said, we're in the small conference room. And they were talking about the same room. And I was just like, perception is reality. You know, like they are in the same space. One thinks it's a big room. One thinks it's a small room. That's probably based off of their life experiences of the conference rooms that they've gone into and dealt with and their paths in their career that they've been in. Maybe one person worked for a corporation before and they were in a conference room with 50 people. And maybe one person, this is the largest conference room they've ever seen in their lives, you know? And so bringing that to reality, just based off of listening to you and the work that you do, it's so funny how often we really want or really mean the same thing and want to get to the same results, but just have completely different backgrounds or perceptions on where we're coming from.
And the impact of that. So you hear the big conference room, you go to the one that you think is the big conference, and you're in the wrong room, right? And so, and that's how it can show up so many times. Like, what were you talking about? That's not the big one. Yeah. That's the smaller. And so we start to get like that frustrated. How could you possibly?
Right.
There's a situation like that, very similar. So I've got a book coming out and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but I did this conference in Tennessee, and my wife and I, we decided we wanted to have some giveaways kind of promoting the book. And so we got these little brains, but they're like stress ball, but they're shaped like brains with the wrinkles and everything. It's really cool. And we had the opportunity to print on the very top of the brain. And so I printed the URL, www.thecureforstupidity.com. And when I envisioned it in my brain, that URL was printed along the lengthwise of the brain, right? Because that makes sense. And so I made up the graphic and I sent it to the team, and we didn't have time to proof it. And so when I get the box of, 250 brains or whatever, I open it up and they printed it the horizontal way. And I'm like, what are you doing? Why on earth would you do that? I'm so mad at the printer. I'm like, how could you possibly? Right. And my wife's like, hello. That's exactly what you're talking about in the book. I'm like, oh my God, that's it. Because in my perception, there's no other way it can be done.
Yeah.
And someone else had a different view of it. And it's like, oh yeah, okay, I get that.
So funny. So Evan, I think that Credit Union West, in the sense of all of this, is doing something right. Because, and you can tell me the numbers, but time and time and time again, your employees rank Credit Union West as the best place to work in Arizona, which I think is phenomenal. So that must mean that you guys are approaching situations well, you're communicating well, your leadership is really setting the tone for how to treat people, I think. Talk to us a little bit about inside of Credit Union West. Let us in the doors a little bit. How are you guys doing all of that?
Yeah, well, and just in reference of what you mentioned, we've been privileged to be nominated as a top company to work for several years in Arizona.
Congratulations.
I would love to tell you that we are the top company in Arizona.
You should just go with it next time.
Right? Like, yeah.
Just my facts aren't always 100% correct.
Absolutely. So. Just emphasize all the right words. But we are, we take pride in being a good workplace. Mm-hmm. And, the great thing about that award is that it is an employee given award. Mm-hmm. It's not some third-party objective organization coming in and giving us that. It's our employees. So, I'll give kind of the communication clarity from an employee perspective, but also towards our members as well. But from a company perspective, a lot of it starts with top down. I mean, leading by example is really the best way to lead. And we've got a lot of leaders on our executive management team that I don't just call them leaders because of their position, but because of how they lead. And they lead by example, and they're approachable. They have a door open strategy. On the whole, our employees, they're not afraid to approach their superiors because they know they're going to be heard, and they know that they're going to get their ear. Mm-hmm. And what that results in is just happy employees, And so from a company perspective, then you shift into how we treat our members. And if you have happy employees, then you're going to have happy members because employees that love what they do and love helping people, which at the end of the day is our objective.
Right.
We're not just there to try to fluff up our membership numbers. Obviously we have to grow just like any other organization does, but our mission, what we're trying to accomplish in the community is really just to enhance people's quality of life. Mm-hmm. And as a financial organization, we do that through personal finances because financial struggles are, depending on the person, kind of an unspoken dissonance within within them. Yeah, if I'm struggling financially, there's a good chance that I'm probably not going to talk about it to many people because there's some pride there. You feel like if you're struggling financially that you've done something wrong and that admits weakness. And I'm sure you can probably dig into that really well. but people, it's a pride issue. And so the way that we can help them, obviously, I can't necessarily impact every aspect of their life, but I can help them understand maybe their finances a little bit better. Mm-hmm. And not just me personally, but as a company. You know, yes, maybe we can do it through education as a marketing department, but just working with members just day to day and offering them products that truly are not going to take advantage of them, that going back to the communication aspect are clear. We try to be upfront. We try to offer our members products that they can actually benefit from, not just simply opening other accounts because we have quotas to meet. You know, that's not our
big bank.
Exactly. That's, you know, I'll let you say that, but that's not our strategy. That's not our approach. Right. You know, we want to help people, whether it's through education, offering accounts with integrity. So really that communication style that starts from an employee, a place for our employees and leadership, really does trickle down into how we interact with members. You know, it's not just to get that nomination as a company to work for. Obviously we're thrilled, but the byproduct is that our members are happy. Yeah. And that's the important thing.
I love that you say that because I worked once upon a time on my Forrest Gump journey. Mm-hmm. I worked for Countrywide Home Loans, which was the largest mortgage lender in the country, probably in the world. And they did some really shady things. Mm. And we were instructed to push certain products because they had the highest margin for the company. Yeah. And I had a lot of trouble with that because I would not want my grandmother to have a loan like this. They were saying, you know, roll in all their debt, do cash out, do like max it out. And people would take all this cash out of their home, believing that their home value would never go down. And this is back in 2006, 2007. Yes. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden now they owe, you know, $200,000-$300,000 on a home that overnight is worth $100,000. Mm-hmm. And I love that you said that you mentioned a couple things about people come in with misperceptions. Yeah. And I love that you guys are helping clear those because that's what I do too.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's the whole point of it is to recognize that those perceptions and misperceptions exist and help folks overcome that. So I love that. And I love that you guys care about your employees. And I love that you care about your customers because that's where we change the world.
Yeah. Well, and you bring up the recession and I think from a financial perspective, several years ago, people had very different perceptions of how they viewed financial institutions. And just from a personal level, what I can appreciate is that working for a credit unions weren't, I can't say holistically, but on the whole, credit unions weren't typically the ones responsible for a lot of the shortcomings that people had from a personal level, you know? And I think a lot of us have seen The Big Short and it's very eye-opening, it's very educational. And I love the way that they approach teaching people about what happened with the intention of not repeating our same mistakes. That's the whole point of history. But, and this is a little bit before my career at the credit union, but during the recession, Credit Union West was out there teaching people how to keep their homes and trying to find ways to keep our members from going into foreclosure. Right. And that, I think that just speaks volumes about who we are as an organization. And I can't take credit for that because I wasn't at the credit union just yet. I still live in Texas.
Take the credit.
But from a company, I just like, that's how we operate.
Yeah.
We're in it to serve. We're in it to make people's lives better. Mm-hmm. I don't want someone to leave the credit union or leave a class that we're doing or leave a branch experience thinking that, what just happened? Like, what is going on? I don't feel like I feel like I know less. I understand less. Mm-hmm. That's not the experience that I want. I want people to come in and understand and to leave being like, okay, like I have a plan because I understand now. Mm-hmm. And I know what I can change. I know how to behave. That's the experience that we want.
It's very clear that you as an organization understand your why. And being out in the community all the time, I see organizations and companies that really know their why. And once you're hired as an individual, or you walk in as a client or a customer, you know whether or not that business is connected to their why, right? Yeah. I see so many businesses that aren't out there. Most of them tend to maybe started with their why, but then lost it along the way as they grew. But I'll tell a story really quick. There's One of our founding members of Local First Arizona, Howard Fleshman, he owns a few tire shops in town called Community Tire Pros and Auto Repair. Years ago, and I won't take credit for this either.
Take credit. That's what you say.
Before I was with Local First, our founder was working with Howard to just help his business. He was a, you know, a member of Local First and growing. You know, she took a look at his website and it said, you know, we sell tires.
Yeah.
But what she knew about Howard was that him and his wife started Community Tire Pros because his son was actually killed in an automobile accident because the driver from the other vehicle had faulty tires on.
Wow.
And that was his why.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, our founder reminded Howard, you need to tell people that, you know, not only the people that walk into your shop, but the people that you employ. And I think about that story, and Howard's such a great person. And I think about working for him, if I were to work for him. The difference between walking into a company that, oh, we just sell tires, I'm just here to change people's tires. No, I'm here to better people's lives.
Save lives.
And have safety on the road so that we can protect people.
Yeah.
You know, imagine the pride in going to work every day, knowing that. And you said something, Evan. You are, Credit Union West is here to improve people's lives financially, right?
Yeah.
You're not here to work on their bank accounts or open up bank accounts or sell them products. You know, that might be some things that you do, but your why is to help families and help people have better lives.
Yeah. And just one example of that, I'll give it real quickly, but we're not very far out of the government shutdown that just happened earlier this year.
Right.
What a great way to start the year, right? We had, yes, obviously at a national level, a lot of coverage and a lot of discussion about that, but we had a lot of families here in Arizona that were affected by that. And just as a testament to leadership of the credit union is we saw a need. We saw families struggling and having to make decisions and find resources they've never even had to think about before. We've had families that are maybe upper middle class families that are considering going to a food bank because they're struggling to make ends meet. And so we saw a need there financially. And what we did was we enacted this program that allowed these government workers and their families that have been affected by the shutdown to receive a truly, and I say clear communication, a truly 0% rate loan for that reason. They could loan that out and we're not making any profit off that. And the response that we had from the community was overwhelming. I think we helped nearly 300 families and we lent out, I think over $1.5 million just in helping these people stay on their feet and not have to worry about losing their homes or getting evicted from their homes or apartments and being able to put food on the table, continue to do that for their families. That's just an example. And that's a way that we wanted to be timely, but also let people know that, hey, we're not just here for, we have some cool perks of our accounts, but we're here to help you. We're not just here to be flashy and make a profit. We're here to help.
And that to me is the essence of good business.
That's good business,
right?
Yeah.
Your shareholders are not in a high rise in, you know, New York City, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or Wall Street or whatever.
No.
And your shareholders are your members. They're the people in the community. And when there's a problem in the community, you center your shareholders, which are the people around you. That's awesome.
Yeah. Eric,
go ahead.
If I would have worked for an organization like that at that time, so I ended up leaving Countrywide because of the shady things. I left about 6 to 8 months before the everything fell out. So thank goodness.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking about if I would have worked for an organization like that that actually cared about the people it was serving, I wouldn't have left. Like that, it would have changed everything.
Yeah,
that's awesome,
Eric. I love. You probably have multiple whys, but I love one of your
whys. Not wives.
Just to
clear, yes. Let's clarify.
WHY'S. Yes.
Love her to death.
The one that I love that you share is your connection to serving back to the public through, you know, kind of what you saw growing up. Would you mind sharing a little
absolutely.
Bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I mentioned a little bit at the top, but... when I was about 5 years old, I was a kid. I was through a series of unfortunate events. We were homeless. My mom, my brother, and I. My brother is 10 and a half years older than I am. Mm-hmm. So when we went, we were in Seattle, and we couldn't go to battered women's shelters because my brother was too old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a man technically at 15 and a half. And so we were, you know, in and out of shelters. But the interesting thing is, you know, in all of my memories of this period of my life, I don't remember being homeless at all. Hmm. Like, I remember going to the library every day and learning to read and you know, doing story time and puppet shows. And I remember going to the parks. There's a one park in particular I loved called Freeway Park. Hmm. It's got this really cool kind of concrete block fountain that you can climb up and get slippery when the water's on. But yeah, it was fun. And I remember going to the Bite of Seattle, which is a gigantic food event with, you know, thousands of vendors and everything. It was huge. Like, that was my experience of being homeless. And actually, I went through an exercise at a conference I went to. We were trying to establish our storytelling why of why we do our work. And you know, my first draft, if I'm so proud, I'm a good writer, is my first draft. I said, you know, my why is, I want to move people from where they are to where they're meant to be. And I shared, I'm so proud of it. And I shared it with a woman next to me in this little workshop. And she's like, I don't believe you. I'm like, no, that's it. Really, that's it. And she's like, no, there's no passion behind your words. Mm. And I'm like, so I sat down and I kind of meditated on it for a minute. And I actually still have the notebook. I wrote down in the notebook, homeless. Mm. And, you know, a big bulk of the work that I do is with municipalities. I work with, you know, all the cities around, but I work with nonprofits and other folks that are serving folks. And as I kind of sat with that, I realized that the reason that I want to, the mission of my company is to serve those who serve. The reason I want to do that is because I didn't know it at the time, but the city employees are the ones that are responsible for the parks and the events and the libraries. And they're the ones that are out doing the work, serving people like me in situations like I was in, so that I have memories of good times instead of awful times. And so that's what I get to do, is I get to serve those who serve. And I, you know, I work, when I get to work with libraries, it's amazing. I mean, they have virtually no budget, you know, but I'll go and I'll do a half day workshop with the library staff and just to say thank you, you know? And so that's my why, is I am the beneficiary of, benefactor, I don't know which one to use. My wife corrects me all the time. But I was the recipient of their good work. And, you know, I've done work with, you know, Fortune 100 banks when I was doing international change management. I've done stuff in New York City, you know, in Toronto. The people who are benefiting from that work are the shareholders in the high rise. And now when I'm doing this, the people who are benefiting are the citizens, and they're the staff members who don't get to go to that, you know, $2,000 conference in, you know, in Tennessee or whatever. And so I get to serve those who are serving others. And the funny thing is, like, especially with, you know, libraries and city services and folks, they're out there serving us as citizens every day. And we don't even know who they are. Like, they are completely invisible to the people they serve, and they do it anyway. And that's like, that is this higher level benevolence that's like, it touches my heart. And so when I have the opportunity, absolutely, that's my why.
That's awesome. And I love that both of you, Evan, you represent, and Eric, you started businesses and organizations who just naturally, part of your DNA is being good, right? And it's not that you maybe don't give back, you know, as an afterthought, or after, you know, you've got to make sure business is running and you're doing well. But it's part of who you are as institutions and as businesses. And we need more of that. We need so much more of it. I feel, you know, with the rise of social media and all the things going on in the world, and I think everyone can agree, you know, we've become so divisive. It's automatically goes straight to fighting, right? Whether we're online or talking politically, you know, there's less and less of, let's find common ground, you know, let's remind ourselves that, hey, we both might have an ill parent, or, you know, right? And through the leadership program I just went through, Valley Leadership, one of the things that was shared with us in one of our earlier programs is there was a story our facilitator told about working with a group of Democrats and a group of Republicans in Congress. And these people could not have been, you know, completely different worldviews, right? They were able to work with them through a training session, and they weren't talking about policy or anything like that. They brought them in to talk about their lives and their families. And two people together from separate sides of the aisle realized they both had children with autism. Mm. Never knew that about each other before, yeah. right? Because what do we automatically go to? The issue mm-hmm. rather than the person. And they were able to craft legislation in their area for benefiting a roadblock for children with autism. Mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what it was. But it's
powerful.
Yeah, it's one of those things where we see it all day long, all the divisiveness. Mm-hmm. But we've got to remember that we have common ground. We have commonality. How do we get there? How do we reach there?
Absolutely.
So, Eric, talk to us a little bit. You've got a book that just came out.
It's just getting ready to come out.
Okay, so, not yet.
So June 12th is the launch date. It's available on pre-order. So, it's called The Cure for Stupidity, Using Brain Science to Explain Irrational Behavior. And it's funny because I was workshopping the title. I kept coming back to this idea of, you know, how could you possibly, mm-hmm. you're an idiot. And as I started sharing this idea of the cure for stupidity, everyone's like, I need that now. and the beauty of it, I think the poetic nature of it is that, you know, I'm assuming people are going to buy the book because they want to cure the stupid people around them.
Right.
I
imagine my wife giving it to me for Christmas.
Exactly. And it's funny. It's funny. As I started sharing it around, people were like, okay, I need two. One for me because I want to read it, but I need my spouse to also have. But the poetic nature of it is actually the cure for stupidity is in changing how we see them, not in changing them. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing. So you mentioned, you know, the big conference room or the small conference room. Like,
right.
How stupid could you be? Like, this is the small conference room, right? And if we start to understand why this person, through their past experiences or whatever, why they said that, they're not stupid anymore.
Right.
They're just rationally going through a process that makes sense. And especially when it comes to this political divisiveness. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I believe that I wrote this book to solve that. Like the vision of my company is I want to change the way the world communicates. And I can see a clear path for the red team and the blue team to actually have conversation. Mm-hmm. And what we find out a lot of times is, you know, the way that you see it is in your mind perfectly reasonable and perfectly rational.
Mm-hmm.
And anytime you argue with anybody, they believe they're rational. They believe they're reasonable. And trying to understand, like, okay, why would a perfectly rational, reasonable person say those things? And like dive into that, and that's where you'll find some change. I've got this family member of mine, and we're politically opposites. Mm. I mean, we are diametrically opposed on almost every category, except for cat memes.
Okay.
Like, we both agree those are cool.
Okay.
Common ground.
Yeah, right? Common ground. And so like, we got to the point where, you know, on Facebook, we're getting ready to do the unfriend thing, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're all doing the unfriend. There's like this epidemic. It's in the Oxford Dictionary,
word
unfriend, because it happens so often. And so I'm getting ready to hit that button. I'm like, you know what? Let me use this as a test bed for my methodology. Like, if I'm teaching this, I should be able to work it through in practice. And so I pulled the argument. I think at the time we were debating over the NFL take a knee protest.
Mm.
And I pulled it into a private message. And I said, you know, hey, you know, Uncle so-and-so, why are you so passionate about your side of the argument? And it wasn't like, you know, why are you saying this? Give me your logic. Give me your reasoning. Let me tell you why all that's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I said, tell me why you're so passionate about it. So I wasn't arguing the fact. I was trying to understand what's underneath his argument. And the interesting thing is, so he's not a blood relative. He's, you know, an uncle by marriage, a couple times removed, whatever. I've only known him for maybe a decade.
Okay.
And so when I started to kind of deconstruct that, I realized based on his experience, everything made sense. Like, the conclusions he made, I don't agree with,
mm-hmm.
but the way he got there made sense to me. And so I can understand him a little differently.
Sure.
And the cool thing is, after a couple of times of us going through that exercise, he then starts coming to me and say, hey, Eric, as a young black man, how do you feel about this news or this thing? And he starts to look at my experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so now we've got this really powerful relationship based on mutual respect,
yeah.
even though we still disagree.
Yeah.
And we're able to actually make a lot of really powerful connections for the people around us, because now I have some insight into, you know, this very conservative Republican, and I am not a conservative Republican. I've got some insight into this old white guy, and I'm not an old white guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I start to approach different situations, I can understand it with more breadth.
Sure.
Because I'm outside of my own experience.
Sure. That's great. That's wonderful. Wow. So new book's coming out soon. We'll hear all about where we can get that in a minute. Evan, anything new coming up for Credit Union West in the community?
Yeah, well, obviously we're heading into summertime, which, as we all know, is a million degrees outside everywhere you go. So, you know, kind of what we're doing from a community perspective is really just gearing up for what's to come when everybody decides that it's okay to go outside again.
Okay.
But, you know, we're working with a lot of different programs throughout the year that aren't really relegated just to a specific season. Mm-hmm. You know, we're a growing organization, so new relationships are popping up all the time. And I know we just came out of Community Banking Month. But, you know, I think it's a good, reminder just for people to understand, like I said, we're not all things to all people, but, there are some specific, I would say individuals, that would be, benefited from starting a relationship with a credit union. Our little tagline, if you want to say, is great stories start with us. And we encourage people to find their story. Yes, it can be a little vague and a little maybe too inspirational, but we want people, that's what we're getting at, is people to start a relationship, start a journey. This summer we have a lot of college students that are graduating and that are kind of taking that first step into their businesses. We have a lot of entrepreneurial student hopefuls that are trying to get started with what's to come. They've had this passion all throughout school of, here's what this business plan that I've been working on is going to look like, and here's why I'm doing it. Talk about the why we're doing things. We have all these students that are creating businesses because of a passion that they have.
Awesome.
And so that's something that we, as a credit union, yes, at any point of year, but just because where we are in the year and all these students that are coming into the business world is, we have a lot of tools that would be very beneficial to them. You know, you're an entrepreneur, you're a freelancer, you may not have a business that can operate on its own finances, that has its own credit, rating. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got a lot of tools to be able to help them out as they are getting their business on their feet. We got a business checking account, for example, that is $100 minimum balance. I mean, mm-hmm. You're a photographer, you're upstarting baker, or, sure. You know, you're still running your business out of your home. I mean, we have a lot of low cost options that, you know, if you were to approach maybe a national bank, their products just may not make sense.
Sure.
Because again, we've talked, you and Local First has talked at length about local businesses and where they get a lot of their funds and their resources from, and a lot of times it's not the big banks. Mm-hmm. So we want people to, when they're thinking about, how am I going to make this turn this dream of a business into a reality?
Yeah.
I think we have a lot of products that would be very helpful to them. So you asked me what's coming new for the credit union.
Yeah.
And my perspective on that is not necessarily what's new for us, but what's new with the community that we're reaching out to.
Love it. Mm-hmm. Awesome. I've got one last question for each of you, and it's the most difficult question of the day.
Oh boy, here we go.
And I have to answer this every time. And so it's incredibly difficult for me to answer it differently every time, but favorite local business in Arizona? Who's going to go first?
I don't know. because that's a loaded question you're asking me. Is it a restaurant? Is it a... I will say, and I'm sure my wife will listen to this later, but she and I are huge plant people.
Okay.
We love plants, and actually went to... So people have... You know, I will say I have had some friends and family that have been like, you guys have a lot of plants. Like, in like a, not like I'm impressed, but like a...
That's kind of creepy. Is this strange?
You guys have a problem.
Do they all have names? Like,
well, yeah. We're not quite that.
Do you cuddle them each?
You know, we admire them for sure. But, you know, I always tell them, at least it's not drugs. You know, it's plants. So okay. Everybody has their thing. But, you know, so we really are partial to nurseries.
Okay.
Yes. And so, yes, the Lowe's and Home Depot have great deals. But, you know, there are a lot of... nurseries here, local nurseries. So a couple of our favorites would probably be, there's, Pueblo, which is down in downtown Phoenix.
Cool.
There's a nursery really close to our house called Right in the Garden, which I love that one because what's so great about it, it's a mother and her son that are working it together, and they're not just selling plants, but they're teaching. Mm-hmm. So people that love plants, but are like, I have a black thumb. I'm going to kill anything I touch. What I love is that just like us, they're taking, you know, misconceptions about how to take care of a plant for them, finances for us, but a plant for them, and how to make it grow and thrive.
Right.
And it's a, it's not just a transaction. When they sell you a plant, they're almost selling you a relationship because they want you to come back, and they're like, they remember you. Hey, how's your spider plant doing? How's your palm that you just bought? How's it doing? Yeah, exactly. Cool. And you're like, oh, it's not so great. And they're like, well, what are you doing? And they try to help you make sure that plant's thriving.
That's cool.
So that's what I love. You're not going to find that at a national box store.
Right.
So,
right.
So yes.
I love Digit Urban Gardens.
Yes. Digit's another great
Street.
One.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then my wife and I were at Desert Botanical Garden last night and they do their own plant sales. I think like once a month. They're super cool.
Yeah.
So yeah. Eric.
So mine is actually Clean Freak Car Wash.
Okay.
So Clean Freak Car Wash is actually run by, I mentioned earlier that I used to do kettle corn at the Phoenix Zoo.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the gentleman who owned the kettle corn company, his name is Scott Grondin. He eventually sold off the company, and now he's one of the founding members of Clean Freak Car Wash. Mm-hmm. And they are one of the first car wash companies in the country to do a membership-based model. And so you would come in and you pay, $16 a month or $19, I don't know what it is, but you get unlimited car washes, at least one a day or up to one a day, for the month. And what they found is that people find that they're taking better care of their vehicles because they're offering a actually really good price for this thing. Mm-hmm. And now all the national car wash companies, they're starting to mirror that model, which is really cool. And so it's wonderful watching them grow. The thing that I love most about Scott, one of the owners, is he's still a mentor of mine. But he's very intentional about leadership development.
Cool.
And so he hires a bunch of, 16-year-old kids, 18-year-old kids who are, their first job, and he gives them an opportunity to dress clean and to do hard work, but also make a wonderful customer experience. It's like, mm-hmm. Well, how can you give a good customer experience to a car wash? Hmm. And he's like, well, the little things, like when we're directing a car into the car wash, we have very clear hand signals. And we actually workshop those hand signals to make sure that people knew exactly what to do. And as we started to do that, people like, oh, that was they don't think about it, but it's very clear. And then they start to work some of these young kids up through the leadership model. Then they get to be managers and system managers. And it's funny, the exact process that he worked me through in the kettle corn company when I was just some kid on a spring break job.
Yeah.
Over the summer, he made me a manager, taught me how to lead, and then had me do training. And so like he worked me through that. And now I'm here where I am now.
Yeah.
He's working all these other kids up through this model. So. Wow. So yes, there's the thing he says he does, which is car washes and memberships. But what he's really after is he's helping kids be leaders in the community, which is really powerful. Yeah.
That's awesome. So mine today is going to be Mi Vegana Madre. They're a small local vegan Mexican restaurant in downtown Glendale.
Wow.
So Jose and Leti, they're the only, what I know of, authentic vegan Mexican food. They take recipes that are traditional Mexican food, where it would be like steak or pork, and they make them vegan. And they use really good spices. And we live in Tempe, and we'll drive 40 minutes to downtown Glendale just for lunch because it that good. They went through our Fuerza Local program, and they're just big advocates for the community. They love animals. Obviously, they have a vegan restaurant, and so they do a lot of work in the community on that front. So they're just great people.
Very cool.
Okay, Eric, where can we find you online?
So you can find me at my website, ericmbailey.com. I also have, if you want to pre-order the book, it's available on Amazon, but you can get it easily at thecureforstupidity.com.
Okay.
Also, I'm on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn as Eric M. Bailey. I think there's underscores between there, but you just search for me, you'll find me. But one thing that I didn't get a chance to talk about is I'm working on a series of leadership videos. It's called The Walking Meeting. And actually, Tommy and I, we're gonna do some partnership and produce a lot more of these. I think there's 7 of them up right now. We're going to start getting into a routine, getting maybe one or two new ones every month, throughout the next year or so.
Yeah.
So it's at thewalkingmeeting.com.
Awesome. Yes. So if you enjoyed hearing from Eric today or seeing him at the Good Business Summit, be on the lookout for some really cool videos we're going to be doing through the Local Learning Lab of Local First Arizona for our members. Evan, Credit Union West, where are you guys?
Sure. So just like Eric, our website is a great place to start, www.cuwest.org. So as in creditunionwest.org. We've got 9 different locations here in the Valley. If you're in the Yavapai area. We've got three branches up there. We'd love to have you come in and just talk to us. And any of our team would be happy to discuss with you. We're also on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, just simply Credit Union West. So that's a great way to follow us, not just what do you have to offer, but what are we doing? So awesome. A lot of our community outreach will go through those channels too. So it's a great opportunity just to learn about us holistically.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Evan, Eric, thank you both so much for being here today. Loved hearing your stories and all you're doing in the community.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. We hope you listening were inspired today by these local leaders that are redefining what it means to do good business. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Conscious Capitalism of Arizona, Max 6, and Phoenix Business Radio X. This is Thomas Barr from Local First AZ reminding you that if we want to build a better Arizona, we need to connect deeply with the local businesses that make us proud to call this place home.